Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Chof HaMed Aleph by the two dots. Gemara here is discussing the incident that was brought in the Mishnah with Maaseh B'Hilni Amalka. Hilni Amalka and her son Munbaz are mentioned numerous times in Mishnayot and Shas with regards to many halachic questions. And that is because, as recorded in Josephus, Hilni Amalka and Munbaz, her son, converted to Judaism and were very supportive of the Jews at the time. They lived towards the end of Bayit Sheni. They probably passed away before the Churban HaBayit, but the Queen Hilni Amalka herself actually set up a palace inside of Yerushalayim, where she resided, and she's actually buried. And there's the burial plots of the king, the queen, of the area where they came from. Hadayab was the tribe. They were up in the Northeast, they were a small kingdom, and through some sort of merchant trade, the Jews ended up coming there, and Josephus records that they were very enchanted with Judaism and then converted, and then became very supportive of the Jews, especially the Jews of Yerushalayim. And therefore, when she came to Yerushalayim, it was a time of drought, and she saw the tremendous poverty, so she actually supported the NEA Yerushalayim. Later on, she made donations to the Beit HaMikdash. We have recorded in the Mishnayot in Yoma that she gave the tablet of Zahav of gold that had the Parshiyat Sota written on it. And she also was supposedly supportive of the Jewish rebellion against Rome. And they actually provided money and troops for the Jews during the Merida Gadol before the Churban HaBayit. So that's this context or background with regards to Hilni Amalka and Munbaz. And therefore, she's mentioned in the Mishnayot, because as the Mishnah in Sukkah says, that Hilni Amalka, asak hol dvarah pi chachamim. That whatever she did according to the chachamim. So we can assume here's a very prominent public figure, and she follows the words of the chachamim, so they'll bring her as a proof. Her actions or her practices are considered to be governing, because she followed the Chachamim, and a prominent person, people knew what she had done and what she was doing. And that's, again, in this Mishnah, she's brought down as evidence to the fact that this is the way she proceeded based on the Psak of Beit Hillel. Now, Gemara over here wants to understand why does Rabbi Yehuda, or what is Rabbi Yehuda arguing about vis-a-vis the Tanna Kamma. The Tanna Kamma says that you had a case where she took a neder nizirut in Chutz La'aretz, 7 years, came to Eretz Yisrael. Beit Hillel tells her you have to do another 7 years. And then she became Tamei on the last day and have to do a subsequent 7 years, 21 years in total. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees and says it was only 14 years. Why does he say that it's 14 years? That's what the Gemara says here. Yibailuhu. Bishnit meit valiba de Beit Shammai. Odilma bishloni meit valiba de Beit Hillel. Rabbi Yehuda could be arguing in one of two ways. He could either be saying that she became Tamei'ah on her last day. By becoming Tamei on her last day, she was Soter to Kol and then has to start again. But he holds like Beit Shammai. And Beit Shammai says when you come into Eretz Yisrael, you only keep 30 days. You keep a Stam Nezirut. You don't keep the full 7 years. So the reason he has 14 years is because she became Tamei'ah on the last day of her Nezirut. So she had to repeat that Nezirut. And that's a total of 14 years. Odilma, Bishalonit mate, the case where he disagrees, she never became Tamei'ah, and it's a Liba de Beit Hillel, that Beit Hillel says that you repeat the years when you come in from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael. So it's 14 years because there was no Tumah involved. Tashma, Alta La'aretz, she came into Eretz Yisrael, Beruah Beit Hillel, Shetei Nizira Od Sheva Shanim Achirot, that she should take, or should take a Neder Nizirut of 7 years, Vechule. And then the Mishnah continues. Now over here, the Gemara quotes the ratio of the Mishnah, which doesn't show you anything about Rabbi Yehuda. The part of the Mishnah that's important to us is the language of Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah. So the Rishonim over here, you can see in the Balei HaTosafot and the Rosh, ask, why did the Gemara here quote the ratio of the Mishnah when it's really after the Seifa of the Mishnah or the part that Rabbi Yehuda is speaking about? The Rishonim answer that they use the Reisha to show you or give evidence as to what the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda is. Lo yatzarich lavi kol zot ha-mishnah, ha-shu rotze le-dakdek. Techi heichid le-tanakama nitmeit besof yimei nizirutah, ha-chanam li-Rabbi Yehuda. should know, just like the Tanakhama says that she became Tmei'ah on the last day or towards the tail end of her Nizirut, so too that is the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. And don't explain Rabbi Yehuda in a case of what's called Havla'ah, a case where she became Tmei'ah, the beginning of her Nizirut, in the middle of her Nizirut, so therefore the days or the year counts are different because of when he thinks it happened, but rather, the scenario is exactly the same for Rabbi Yehuda as it is for the Tanakhama. That's why the Rishonim say here that they quote the first part of the Mishnah as well to say to you that Rabbi Yehuda's case or Rabbi Yehuda's explanation parallels that of the Tanakhama. Now, the Gemara says, "V'isal gadatko b'shinit meit b'ali b'debet shamai." If you think that the way that Rabbi Yehuda is arguing on the Tanakhama is because he believes that she became Tmei'ah on the last day, but he paskins like Beit Shammai, then Iochi, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Loita Nizira El Yudalit Shana, then why is Rabbi Yehuda saying that she is only a Nizira for 14 years? Yudalit Shana, Shloshim Yom, Mibayile. Should be 14 years and 30 days. The Pashtut way to read this Gemara is that Beit Shammai requires you when you come back into Eretz Yisrael for 30 days to keep a Neder Nizirut. So the assumption being that when she came from Chutz Laaretz to Eretz Yisrael, she kept 30 days, and then she became Tmei'ah. If she became Tmei'ah at that point, now she has to keep another Neder Nizirut, another 7 years, maybe even another possible 7 years and 30 days. So the number is not right in terms of 14 years. It's really more than 14 years. It's 14 years, at least a minimum of 30 plus days, maybe even up to 60 days that she has to keep. So why does the Mishnah say that Rabbi Yehuda says 14 years? If he says 14 years, that means that he can't be holding like Beit Shammai and saying that she became Tmei'ah, because then it would have been in excess of 14 years. If you just say he holds like Beit Hillel, but there was no Tumah, then you have 7 years and 7 years. You have 14 years. It makes sense. But if you do it according to Beit Shammai, it's 14 years plus the additional 30 days that she has to do when she comes in from Chutz La'aretz into Eretz Yisrael according to Beit Shammai. So in this explanation of this Gemara, actually three approaches to it. The Mifaresh brings two, and then the Baalei HaTosafot have a third approach. In the first approach, according to the Mifaresh, it's along the lines of what we just said, which is that if she came in from Chutz La'aretz 7 years, and then came into Eretz Yisrael, she was keeping 30 days, and then she became Tmei'ah during those 30 days. The 30 days are considered to be a part of the original Nizirut. It's Oker HaKol. And therefore, now she is okay the 7 years and 30 days, which she has to then repeat in terms of the 7 years and 30 days. And that's how you get to the 14 years, but it should be the 14 years plus at least 30 days, and maybe even more than 30 days, depending how many of the first time she got through the 30 days. So according to this pshat in the Mifaresh, the 30-day extension that she does when she came into Eretz Yisrael is considered to be integrally a part of the original Nizirut. Therefore, when she became Tmei'ah during that period of time, it's okay the entire Nizirut. And now she has to repeat afterwards the 7 years plus the 30 days. And depending how many 30 days she did in the beginning, it'll actually turn out to be 14 years and 30 plus days. And therefore, that presents a problem with that explanation, because the Gemara only assumes that it's 14 years and 30 days that it should have been, not more than that. In addition, the upcoming Gemara says, Tanya Nami Ochi, it's not clear what the brayta that we bring has anything to do with this explanation. And Mefaresh then brings a second explanation. So the case was that she became Tmei'ah towards the end of her 7 years in the Chutz La'aretz, not exactly at the end, but towards the end. And then she had to repeat the entire 7 years. But instead of repeating the entire 7 years in the Chutz La'aretz, she came into Eretz Yisrael and did those 7 years in Eretz Yisrael itself. And then she became Tmei'ah again in that second set of 7 years in Eretz Yisrael. She became Tmei'ah on the last day of those 7 years. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, we're going to see holds like Rabbi Eliezer, that if she became Tmei'ah on the Yom Elot, she only has to wait another 30 days. Then the case here is 14 years and 30 days. She had very close to 7 years in Chutz La'aretz. She had another 7 years in Eretz Yisrael plus 30 days for becoming Tmei'ah on the last day of her 14 years. So now you have 14 years and roughly 30 days. The problem, obviously, with this pshat is that she becomes Tmei'ah twice, which we don't find in the Mishnah or the Gemara, and he mentioned the fact that there were two incidents of Tumah. We only have one incident of Tumah, but this explanation of the Faresh says that there are two incidents of Tumah. According to the Baalei HaTosafot, The case is similar to the first explanation of the Mefaresh, but he simply says that she just has to repeat the 7 years and not the 30 days. It means that she came into Eretz Yisrael after doing 7 years, and according to Beit Shammai, she was keeping the 30 days. At the end of the 30 days, she became Tmeya, and now she's got to do a whole another 7 years over again. Not 7 years and 30 days, but 7 years. And that's the Gemara's question, shouldn't it be 14 years and 30 days? Once again here, the Tanya Nami Hochi is hard to explain why the upcoming Braita in the Gemara is supportive of this position. The Rosh brings an alternate Girsa, which is that the question of the Gemara is, the Eat Sparim de Gassinan, Yudalit Shana, Lamin Mi Boile. Why is she keeping 14 years? It just should be 30. And then, Ditanya, because we have a Braita that says Rabbi Yehuda subscribes to Rabbi Eliezer's position that if you come to Mayan the last day, you only have to make up 30 days. So if that's the case here, why is she keeping another 7 years in Eretz Yisrael? She should just keep another 30 days. And therefore, it should be a total of 7 years and 60 days, not 14 years. And then the Tanya Nami Ochi is a Braita that supports this understanding that Rabbi Yehuda subscribes to Rabbi Eliezer's position that if you come to Tamei on Yom Malot, you only have to keep an additional 30 days. So those are the three different interpretations of what Rabbi Yehuda's position is. Then based on that, the Gemara says, Tanya Nami Ochi. We have a Braita that supports that understanding. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Mishum Rabbi Eliezer Demakra Zo Tarata Nazir. That this is the Tarata Nazir at Taram Rak. You need to maybe Yom Malot, Tein Lo Tarata Nazir. When you come to Mayan the last day, you add in 30 days. You add in 30 days extra. Now, according to the first pshat in the Mefaresh, she became Tmeya when she came into Eretz Yisrael. That has nothing to do with Yom Malot. And therefore, what's the relevance of the Tanya Nami Hochi? Because she became Tmeya sometime during that 30 days. And then he says, oh, that's okay. So the Tanya Nami Hochi doesn't make so much sense. According to the second pshat in the Mefaresh, the Tanya Nami Hochi supports our understanding that we're talking about Yom Malot, and Yom Malot only adds in 30 days, but that means that it shouldn't be just 14 years, it should be 14 years and 30 days. This Tanya Nami Ochi, therefore, according to some, is not meaningful in this case. According to the first interpretation of the Mefaresh, as well as the interpretation of Tosafot, the Tanya Nami Ochi is not relevant here, and there were Girsaot that left out this next section of the Gemara completely. Whereas according to the second explanation in the Mefaresh, this Tanya Nami Ochi supports the idea that there was an additional 30 days at the tail end because of the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer, and so too in the Shita of the Rosh brought in that Girsa, the Tanya Nami Ochi shows that Rabbi Yehuda holds of that position of Rabbi Eliezer that you only have 30 days when it's a Yom Melot. And that seems to be the case that the Balei Tosafot don't seem to have this Girsa of Tanya Nami Ochi in the Gemara, and both the Mefaresh and the Rosh associate the Tanya Nami Ochi with the second Perush that they bring, where that Tanya Nami Ochi is supportive of that understanding that the Yom Malot generates a 30-day additional Nizirut. And now the Mishnah says, Meish ayush tei kitei edim meidot oto. You have two sets of edim that are testifying about him. Elu meidim shenazar shtayim, ve'elu meidim shenazar chamesh. One of them says two, and one of them says five. What the reference to do over here is the Mefaresh says years. One of them says that he took a Neder Nizirot for 2 years. And one says, set of Edim say that he took the Neder Nizirot for 5 years. The Balei HaTosafot say that's a number of Nizirot that he took. Did the person take a Neder Nizirot, 2 Nidre Nizirot, or 5 Nidre Nizirot? So Nidre 2 times 30 would be 60 days. And that would be 5 times 30, but they'll be discrete Nizirot. He'd have to bring Korbanot and be mitar himself each time from each of the Nizirot. So it's a question if we're dealing with Shanim or Nidre Nizirot. But here you have two sets of Edim, one saying two, one saying five. Now what does the person himself say over here? Tosafot says he can't be silent, because if he's silent, Shtika Kehoda'ah, and therefore he's agreeing with whatever the Edim are saying. So Tosafot comes up with three possible explanations for what the individual himself, who they're testifying about, says. One possibility is that he's machish, that he disagrees with what they're saying. He says, no, I didn't say that. And therefore he is denying what each one of these sets of Edim is saying, and there is no hodah. The other possibility is, he says, any hodah. I don't remember. I don't know what I said. So he's relying on the Edim, but his shtika is not kohodah because he says, I didn't know. Or the last possibility he says is, it's a case where the Edim came simultaneously. And therefore, he says, my silence is meaningless. I don't have to say anything because they themselves are contradicting each other. So if I'm silent, what am I admitting? I'm admitting they're contradicting each other. There's no admission here in my silence. So those are the three possible scenarios that Tosfot puts together for what the reaction of the individual who they are speaking about is. Read in this week's Parsha. Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh LaZeh. We're responsible for other people's activities if we know. If we know that he took a neder nizirut and he's not keeping his neder nizirut, we're going to be held accountable if we don't enforce the halachot. That's what Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh LaZeh. That's this week's Parsha Nitzavim. That there is an obligation on Kol Yisrael to ensure that everybody keeps their word and keeps the mitzvot. And just as a sidebar here, since we're going into Rosh Hashanah, that it's a good musar in general. Most people worry about other people's spiritual standing and accomplishments and worry about their own monetary accomplishments. And it should be just the opposite, that we should worry about our own spiritual flaws and needs and what we need to correct. And we should worry about what other people need monetarily and not what we need monetarily. So here again, this is people worrying about other people's spiritual health. And obviously it's better to focus on one own spiritual health, and then that'll probably help everybody else's spiritual health. But again, we can have down the kafschut that they were looking out, they wanted to make sure that this person was abiding by the halacha and the Torah, and that they wouldn't be held accountable for his lack of compliance with his nether nizirut. He says, come to Beit Yisrael, any odea, Beit Din calls out, does anybody know? And then the kaidim come in. Beit Shemai omrim nechlaka yedut, bein ka nizirut. You have contradicting idiot. Therefore, it's a stalemate. And we say zu keneged zu, and it's as if they don't exist. And therefore, there's no nizirut. Beit Hillel omrim, yesh b'chlal chameish shtayim, subsumed within five is two. Shei nazir shtayim. They both agree that he took a minimum of two. So if they both agree about a minimum of two, we have at least a dud for two. The argument is only on the subsequent three. So basically, we bifurcate their testimony into two plus three, and one of them saying two. So on the level of two, they agree. The plus three is where they disagree. But if we bifurcate their testimony, we can say there is a testimony for two, not that one wipes the other one out, and as if they don't exist at all. Matnitan deloki hai tana. Our Mishnah is not like this, Tana. Tanya, Eishpal b'noshu Rabbi Yochanan ben Hoku Omer, Lo nechluku Beit Shemai Beit Hillel Ashtei Kitei Edim. Beit Shemai Beit Hillel do not disagree when you have two full sets of Edim testifying. Achat Omeret Shtayim v'achat Omeret Chamesh Sheish b'chlal Chamesh Shtayim. Everybody agrees in that case. Obviously our Mishnah disagrees. Our case in the Mishnah is we have two sets of Edim coming and they're disagreeing and we see a machloket. Eishpal b'noshu Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka says that's not the case. When it's two sets of Edim, everybody agrees that two is within five. Ama nechluku, where is machlokes Beit Hillel b'Shemai? Bekat achat. It's one kat, meaning you have one aid coming and saying two, and one aid coming and saying five. Can we mitzaref? Can we join together these two disparate Edim and say they at least agree on two, and now we have a single kat Edim that's testifying to two? Echad omer shtayim, v'echad omer chamesh. One of them says two, one of them says five. Maybe Shemai says you can't make this into a pair of witnesses because they're saying different things. One says five, one says two. Again, bifurcate the statement of the one who says five. He's saying two plus three. If he's saying two plus three, we at least have an edut if we join them together that says he is at minimum chayav 2 years of nizirut or two niziriyot. So that's the way Rabbi Shmuel explains it. Amarav, and now we have a statement for Rav, akom modim bimoneh. Everybody agrees, in the way that the Rishonim explained over here, everybody agrees, nechlaka idutan, that their idut does not work when he is moneh, when they enumerate the numbers. And now, what does that mean? The Gemara is going to explain. Amalei Rav Chama the Rav Chista. My kamar. What exactly is Rav saying? Ilei ma'echad omer chamesh velo shtayim, ve'chad omer shtayim velo chamesh. One of the idim is saying five and not two. And the other one is saying two and not five. Ha kamechashe adodi. Then they're clearly arguing. So that can't be what Rav meant by moneh, that they counted. That they specified their number to the exclusion of the other number. There it's clear that everybody agrees that the two edim cannot be joined together, or the two kite edim are machshim zedzeh. El echad omer echad v'shtayim. Rather, the case is here, the first one says 1 and 2. Echad omer shlosh arba v'chamesh. The other one says 3, 4, 5. So Gemara says, have a lovely. Why do you have to tell me that that's the case? Hashta yesh lamar chamirta amarav kilto lo amar. So here it's a very difficult girsa and very difficult Gemara. The way that most of the Rishonim deal with it, Tosafot, the Rosh, over here is they eliminate Amarav from the Girsa. If you eliminate Amarav from the Girsa, then you can more easily read the Gemara, which is, Halomali, what are you telling me over here? Hasha yishtomar chamirta amar kiltolo amar? Then the question of the Gemara is, just because he said 3, 4, 5, why does that mean that he didn't say 1, 2? All he did was pick up where the other guy left off. The first guy comes and testifies, 1 and 2. Next guy comes says, no, 3, 4, 5. That doesn't mean that he's saying 3, 4, 5 and not 1 and 2. It means that he's just saying, in addition, it's 3, 4, 5, but he still agrees about the 1 and 2. So according to this, originally what the Gemara thought was that Rav said that by Munet, when you enumerate the numbers, that's the equivalent of saying 5 and not 2, and 2 and not 5. There everybody agrees that the two edim cannot be joined together, or the two kitei edim are machshin zedzeh because emetzu negetzu, and it's as if there's nobody there because they deny the other position. So you can't talk about being subsumed when you deny the other position. So then Rav comes along and says that Munet is exactly that type of case. Munet is a case where one says 1, 2. When he says 1, 2, it means the exclusion of 3, 4, 5. And when the one who says 5 says 3, 4, 5, that's the exclusion of 1, 2. And the Gemara on that says, why would you say that? In a case where the person says 3, 4, 5, that's not automatically coming to say not 1, 2. All they're doing is picking up where the other guy left off. They're not coming to say 3, 4, 5 and not 1, 2. They're just saying, you said 1, 2, we think it's also 3, 4, 5. In that case, you should be able to join them together. And then the Gemara continues and says, Amri b'amarovo, in Eretz Yisrael they say, Ein hachasha b'monet. That in Eretz Yisrael, they view this differently. Whether they're bringing Marov and Eretz Yisrael to say that this argues on Rav, and Eretz Yisrael they argue on Rav, or they're coming to say that in Eretz Yisrael, the Mesorah was that Rav said, Ein achasha b'moneh, that there is no achasha b'moneh, and therefore you wouldn't have a problem here because then that would accord with what the Gemara said before. Ein ochanami, when it comes to moneh, but Ein achasha b'moneh. There is no achasha b'moneh, and that you can join these ediot. It's not automatic that when he says 3, 4, 5, he's coming to the exclusion of 1, 2. And therefore then the statement here is supportive of Rav Chama's challenge to Rav Chista about the statement of Rav, which is that the Yushalmi in Rav Shita seems to agree that there is no issue over here. And therefore, it doesn't make sense the way that Rav is quoted over here. It disagrees with what Rav said before. That's the way that the Rosh, the Balei Tosafot, learned this Gemara. But then, that leaves out the girsa of Amarav. On the other hand, the Mifaresh leaves in the girsa of Amarav, and he says something very interesting here. It's interesting from two perspectives. One is that he's talking about a Yerushalmi, and he's spending a lot of time in Yerushalmi, which is one of the reasons that you can believe that this is not Rashi over here, because Rashi does not discuss the Yerushalmi, and does not, for sure, try to reconcile Yerushalmi into a Bavli. Number two, the Mifaresh claims here that the Gemara is citing the Yerushalmi as a question on this position, on this explanation. Which is amazing, that the Bavli should be referencing a Yerushalmi as a question. Sometimes they'll bring a quote from someone in Yerushalmi, bring a quote from the Marova, but to say that the Gemara here is trying to reconcile with what's written in the Yerushalmi seems very far-fetched. But that's the way the Mifaresh explains this Gemara. And he says that after we say that Moneh comes excluded, the Gemara says, Hamali, Hamalamali, why do I need this? Hasha yesh lamar chamirta amarav. The Rav says it by chamirta, kilta lo amar. By the kilta, he doesn't say it. He says it by two sets of edim that they're arguing, then certainly by one set of edim where you're trying to combine them. What the Mefresh says is, Heichadavu bet kite edim, v'chat omer chat shtayim, shnei omer gimel dalet hei, shaminin le'rei the Rav. We already know from the Yerushalmi that nechla kaidutam, that over there we said that they do not get together, they're one and one. Ve'ichad shemina le Rav damar hachi. Where do we know that Rav said this? V'masechet Sanhedrin Yushalmit. And Yushalmi in Sanhedrin. Tatani lahatam lahachmatit lahacha. Based on this mission, it says over there, Amarav, bichlau nechloku. They only argue when you say 5 versus 2. Aval bifrat divrei hakol nechleka edut. But if they go down to numbers, then everybody agrees that the edut is divided. Hashi yesh lomar chamirta amar rav kilta lo amar. He didn't say by the more kula case, meaning that in the case where Rav says it's 2 sets of edim, he says that if 2 sets of edim come and they enumerate the numbers, they're considered to be nechleka edutan. Then kilta lo amar. In this case where it's 1 aid and 1 aid, certainly he would say that. And therefore, why does Rav need to make the statement here? It's obvious from his position with regards to our Mishnah, what he holds over here. And then the Gemara comes along and says, Imrei b'marova in chashav b'monet. They disagree. In Eretz Yisrael, they disagree with this position of Rav. We have a position in Eretz Yisrael that says, in chashav b'monet. But the way that the Mifarish says over here is, the Gemara wants to understand what's the Chiddush in Rav's position over here, because we already know what Rav's position is vis-a-vis the Mishnah, where he says there's a machloket already when there are 2 sets of edim versus 2 sets of edim. Certainly, he's going to think that there is a machloket or a problem when it's 1 aid versus 1 aid. And therefore, what is the addition? What is Rav adding in this case? And that's the question of the Gemara. All right, with that, we end the perek. Hadron alach, mishamar. Now, we begin the next perek. Mishamar arini nazir. Person declares that they are nazir. Mishamach habeiro. Friend hears it. Vamar vani vani. One guy says vani, another guy says vani. Kulam nizirim. They all are considered to be nizirim. Now that is because they are nitpasim. They are using this first guy's neder nizirut, and they're basically through a yad of saying vani, they are connecting themselves to that first neder nizirut. Hutara rishon hutro kulan. If the first one is matir his neder, then they're all released from their nether. Either because they were matpis in his nether, and if his nether disappears, then there's nothing for them to be matpis with because the nether's not there. It's okir the nether mikaro. Or because their nether was talui on him. They extended the nether based on his nether, and if he doesn't have a nether, then their vani also didn't engage into a nether because they're not connected to anyone who is a nazir. Because vani by itself is meaningless. But since their nether was connected to his nether, hatara of his nether is also hatara of their nether. Hutar acharon, if the last one gets hatarat nidarim, acharon mutar, then the last one is released, vukulan asurim, and the remainder of them are asurim. The Gemara will deal in tomorrow's daf with the question as to how exactly they entered into this nether nizirut. The two possibilities, which is the first possibility is that they are connected to the original guy. Each one of them is connecting themselves to the original guy. Or the other possibility is that they did a daisy chain, which is that the first guy took a nether, number 2 connected his nether to number 1, number 3 connected his nether to number 2. And it's a daisy chain. Depending on what you think the Gemara is, now Hutar Rishon, everybody agrees, everybody's Mutar. Whether that is that everybody took the nether connected to the first guy, so the first guy's out, then everybody's nether disappears. Or even if you did a daisy chain, still doesn't matter. Once you take out the first guy, the second guy's out. Once the second guy's out, the third guy's also out. So that's understandable. But Hutar Achron, and everybody else is Asur, for the guy who says it's a daisy chain, then you get to release, the last guy gets released, the two guys before him have no release from that. They're in their own daisy chain. According to the one who says that they're all connected to the first party, then what you have to say over here is when Hutar Achron means that anybody besides the first individual gets that Tzarat Nedarim, that releases him alone and nobody else from the Nedar. And now the Gemara says, Arei Nazir, Bishama Chaveiro, he says, I am a Nazir, and his friend hears it, Vamar, Pi Kapiv, Visari Kisaro, my mouth is like his mouth, my hair is like his hair. Again, Arizeh Nazir, that is, creates a nazirut. The Gemara will talk about what exactly the chiddush is or what exactly is going on over here. But he is still connecting himself to the first individual. He's just using a language that is not just and me or clear, but something that relates to the nazirut. Hareini nazir. I am a nazir. V'shama ishto. And his wife hears it. Vamra vani. And she says, me too. She uses her husband's neder nazirut to create a neder nazirut. Meferet shela v'shelo kayam. He's allowed to wipe out her neder through hafara, which is a nullification of her neder prospectively. We'll see the Gemara on tomorrow's daf will argue about exactly how the hafara, the husband, works. But his nether remains intact, because her nether had nothing to do with his nether. Hareini nizira, if she says, I am a nizira, v'shama bala, and then her husband heard this, v'amar v'ani, me too. Eino yachol afer. At that point, he cannot be mefer her nether, because by the fact that he used her nether to generate his nether, it's the equivalent of being mikayim her nether. And once the husband is mikayim a nether of his wife, he cannot go back and then be mefer the nether after the fact. Now, he needs to be mikayim her nether in that sense, because if he's mefer the nether, then his nether will not take effect. So he needs her nether to be intact in order for his nether to be there. And that is because he's still subject to lo yachel devaro. He cannot violate his word. If he's mefer a nether and that ruins his nether, then he is being mechel devarav. He is profaning his word. And he's not upholding his nether nizirut. So therefore, eno yachol afer, in this case, he cannot be mefer her nether. Because if you believe that hafarat abal ruins it retroactively, certainly he can't do it. Because that for certain will undermine his nether. According to the one who says that a baal's hafara is only prospective, the reason that he can't be made for the nether is because he was mikayim the nether. When he said vani means you're good and I'm adding on to that, or I'm attaching to that. By the fact that he's attaching to it means that he has affirmed the nether. Then he wants to be made for after the fact, he can't do that because he's already affirmed her nether. Hareini nazir va'at. He says, I am a nazir, and what about you? He says to his wife, what do you want? V'amra amein. And she says, so be it, me too. Amen, I am also. Mefer et shalah, he's allowed to take out her nether, bishalo kayam. But his nether remains in place. Because he cannot, as Tosfot says, impose a nether nizirut on his wife. Therefore, when he took his nether nizirut, it was independent. And since his nether nizirut was independent, he can uphold his nether nizirut and keeps his nether nizirut, but he can wipe out his wife's nether nizirut, because he offered her the opportunity. She independently became a nizira, and therefore he can be made for that nizirut because he didn't do anything to either uphold her nether or impose the nether on her. In this case, the Rambam actually says, and probably had a different girsa in the Mishnah, that if he's made for etshalah, then his nether also falls away. What you have to suggest over here, according to the Rambam, is that when he queried his wife to see if she also wanted to be a nizira, that was not only a question as to whether she wanted to be a nizira, he was also predicating his nizirut on her taking the nether nizirut. When he takes his nether nizirut and then says, "You, and what about you, my wife?" He's saying, well, if we're going to be nizirim together, then that's why I want to be a nazir. But if you reject it, then not only will you not be a nizira, but neither will I be a nazir. And therefore, if he's mefer his wife's nether after the fact, that will also ruin his nether, because his nether was predicated on her nether nizirut. And therefore, the Rambam says that if he's mefer et shalah, it also affects his nether, not like what our Mishnah says, that it's mefer et shalah, v'shalo kayam. Hareini nizira, on the other hand, if it's the other way around, she says, I am a nizira, v'ata, do you want to join me? V'amar amein, he says, yes. Eino yochol afer. At this point, he cannot be made fair the nether, because by his agreeing to her question, it's the equivalent of being mikayim her nether. Because when she comes and proposes to him that he should join in as well, his nether is connected to her original nether. And since her original nether now is mikuyam, the fact that he extended his nether based on her question, therefore it's the equivalent of being mikayim her nether. So now, Yoti Ish Lakish Kameh the Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya. Ish Lakish was sitting before Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya. Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya is the grandson of Rabbi. He's an Amora. And that would put him in the time of Ish Lakish Rabbi Yochanan. Yoti Vikamar. And he's sitting there and saying, Ish Lakish. Behu, Sheet Pisu Kulan Betoch Kedei Dibur. That's only if they all connect their Neder Nizirut, Toch Kedei Dibur, similarly here to the first individual. Vikama Toch Kedei Dibur. What's the duration of Tochadei Dibur? Kedei Shelat Shalom. It is the amount of time to greet. Bekama Kedei Shelat Shalom. How much is saying or greeting someone? So technically it would be Shalom Alecha. That would be enough. But here the Gemara says, Kedei Shomer Shalom Talmid the Rav. It is the ability of a Talmid to say to his Rav, hello, and greet him, which is Shalom Alecha Rabbi. According to the Taz, it's Shalom Alecha Rabbi Umori. But here, it's the ability of the individual to greet the Rav. The Bali HaTosafot, in many places, explain the reason for this halacha of Tokeh de Dibur is that an individual is engaged in doing something, and then his Rebbe comes by. So when his Rebbe comes by, he wants to greet his Rebbe. So he says, Shalom Alecha Rabbi. Then he wants to go back to what he's doing. We don't want that to be a hefsek in whatever that he is engaged in. So basically the Chachamim established that window of Tokeh de Dibur keeps him within the framework of what he was doing before, and it's not a hefsek, and it's not a leaving of what he did before, because he's compelled to deal or to greet his Rabbi. And if we tell him he can't, because, or we tell him that if he does that, he's going to lose out on the other thing, he's not going to greet his Rebbe. So in order to facilitate the ability to greet his Rebbe and still be engaged in whatever it is, we say Tokeh de Dibur. And now, with the assumption being here, is that Tokeh de Dibur means that Vani, Vani, we're done. The first guy said already Nazir, and within a Tokeh de Dibur of that guy saying Areni Nazir, those two individuals say Vani Vani. They're all captured in Tokeh de Dibur. Then we have a statement here. Amarle, Rabbi Yehuda Nasir responds to Reish Lakish and says, Tov, lo shavakta rafcha l'talmida. Now you haven't left any room for the Talmid. So he's clearly asking a question about Reish Lakish's position. So what you have to do here is deal with what is Reish Lakish's position exactly. And then what is the question of Rabbi Yehuda Nasiah on Reish Lakish's question? So, first of all, it seems clear from Reish Lakish's statement that he believes the Tokeh de Dibur here is not, number two is in Tokeh de Dibur of number one, and number three is Tokeh de Dibur of number two, but rather, everybody's gotta be within Tokeh de Dibur of number one. So when number two says Vani, he means he has to do within Tokeh de Dibur of number one, and when number two says it, he has to also be Tokeh de Dibur of number one. That means, according to the Mifaresh over here, Tokeh de Dibur starts from the moment that the first person speaks. So the first one says, Hareni Nazir. That's already taken up one of your words from Shalom Alecha Rabbi. Then you have two words left of Tokeh de Dibur. That's why the Mishnah says, Vani, Vani. Two more people can fit in that time period. Since two more people can fit in that time period, you have three total, but two people who connected onto the first Nazir. That's what Reish Lakish is proposing over here. That Tokeh de Dibur, you can have three Nazirim, the original Nazir, plus two tag-alongs that say Vani Vani, because that's subsumed under the time period of Shalom Alecha Rabbi. Along comes Rabbi Yehuda Nasiah and says, not that Rabbi Yehuda Nasiah disagrees with the fundamental time period that Reish Lakish is proposing over here, but Milta Ba'alma Kamashman, he's saying something in general. If you do that, the Talmid will never succeed at getting his Nazirut in or whatever he's engaged in. Because what you're doing is saying that he has Shalom Alecha Rabbi is the window. Well, if the Talmid goes and greets his Rebbe and says Shalom Alecha Rabbi, the window is expired. And you've left him no time to deal with it. Rabbi Yehuda Nasiah's question is not on Reish Lakish as you should be able to add more people, but rather his question is that this is just a hara, that a Talmid can't be matpis because there's not enough time. The Talmud is going to be left out in the cold in this case. But that's all it is. It's a hara. And that also explains why Reish Lakish doesn't respond, because Rabbi Yehuda Nasiah is not arguing on him. And again, according to the Mefarash's explanation, it makes sense because the Mishnah says, Vani, Vani, that there are two additional people there. And that's what Reish Lakish suggests that you're able to do. So it's a hara that if that is the window that you say the Chachamim granted people of Tokeh de Dibur, when a Talmid actually says, Shalom Alecha Rabbi, he will not be able to engage in the Zirut, or he would not be able to be continuing whatever he was doing before, because he would have now gone over that threshold. So it's a more generic type of Hi'ara. I don't know if it's a question necessarily according to Mefaresh, but just Rabbi Nasiah noting that this is an issue, that if the Talmid actually does act in this way, he's going to be stuck at that point in time. The Rivan brings in the Nuskalot over here, that the machloket, or the question of Rabbi Yehuda Nasiah over here is, you're saying that Shalom Alecha Rabbi gives you two extra words, and that's why Mishnah says Vani Vani, three in total. What Rabbi Yehuda Nasiah is saying is you could get four in. The Rivan actually explains the machloket between two and three as being an argument about what exactly the greeting is over here. Is it a greeting of the Rav to the Talmid, or the Talmid to the Rav? If it's a Rav to the Talmid, it's Shalom Alecha, and if it's from the Talmid to the Rav, it's Shalom Alecha Rabbi. And that's the difference between the two and three words that are there. But you could also explain the Rivan in the following manner. You're saying that Shalom Alecha Rabbi gives you two extra words. And Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya says, you're counting the Shlomo Lecha Rabbi from the wrong point in time. Shlomo Lecha Rabbi does not start from the first guy speaking, but rather at the termination of the first guy speaking. That's the window that opens up when he stops speaking. So Shlomo Lecha Rabbi should give you the ability to be Matpis 3 Nizirot, afterwards not 2. The way that the Mefaresh is explaining Reish Lakish, Reish Lakish says, Shalom Alecha already is when he says, Harini Nazir is covering the Shalom part of it. And Shalom Alecha Rabbi leaves you over another space for 2 more Nazirim, 3 in total. What Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya is saying is you can get 4 in. Because Harini Nazir is not included. It's when he stops speaking, that's when the clock starts ticking, the Tokh De Dibor. Shalom Alecha Rabbi leaves you 3 spots. That means 3 people should be able to be added on afterwards. So that's the way that the Mefaresh reads the Gemara. One according to the Mefaresh, just reading it inside. The other one based on the Girsa of the Rivan in the Mefaresh. The Balei Tosafot disagree and say that that is not what is being said over here, but rather Reish Lakish is saying that you have the ability to be 3 people over here, similar to the conclusion of the Rivan in Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya. That's really what Reish Lakish is saying. Reish Lakish is saying, if Shalom Alecha Rabbi, Shalom Alecha is 3 words. That means the 3 people could be at peace with it. Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya says it should be 4 people. Why should it be 4 people? Because if the Talmud says Shalom Alecha Rabbi, you still have to give him time afterwards to continue his statement or do whatever he wants to do. And that's the question of Yehuda Nasiya, which is, you can't say it's just 3. It's just Shalom Alecha Rabbi, because then you defeated the whole purpose of the Toch de Dibur. And again, Balei Tosfot say everywhere, the purpose of Toch de Dibur is to give the Talmud a chance to turn to his rabbi, greet him, and then go back to what he's doing and still be considered as if he's there. That means that you really have a little more time than Toch de Dibur. Toch de Dibur is the amount of time to speak to the rabbi, then you come back to what you're doing, that's still considered to be connected. That's the case, according to the Balei Tosfot. Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya says you could get 4 in and not 3. According to Reish Lakish, it's Shalom Alecha Rabbi, that's 3. Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya says, no, Shalom Alecha Rabbi is the time that you give to the Talmud. Then number 4 is because right after that, it's still considered to be connected. And that's his question on Reish Lakish. There is another approach amongst the Rishonim, which says that Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya's question is much more fundamental. Over here, in each time we've said that the question of Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya is just incremental. According to the Rivan in the Mefaresh, it was Reish Lakish saying 2. And the Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya saying 3. According to Balei Tosafot, it's that the Reish Lakish is saying 3 and Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya is saying 4. So they fundamentally agree. It's just how many can you get in Toch Kedei Dibur. And even according to the first Pshat in the Mefaresh, that Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya is just making a hara. He's not disagreeing necessarily. He's just pointing out now that the Talmid stuck, because when he says Shalom Alecha Rabbi, he's stuck. There is a view of Masri Rishonim that Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya disagrees fundamentally and says, Reish Lakish says that Toch Kedei Dibur means Toch Kedei Dibur, the first guy who spoke. That means that at the end of the Harini Nazir, according to the Balei Tosafot, or including the Harini Nazir, according to the Mefaresh, you have that amount of time from the termination of the first guy speaking for any amount of people to join in. So there it's 2, 3, 4, whatever the number is. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya comes along and says, you got it wrong. Toch Kedei Dibur is not driven by the first individual. It's driven by the last person to speak. Because you are then topically relevant. That's what we want to know. That you're still within the topic or topically relevant. When number 1 speaks, then Toch Kedei Dibur, number 2 speaks. Then, after number 2 speaks, when number 3 speaks, his Toch Kedei Dibur is not referencing number 1, it's referencing number 2. Because number 2 now extended the time period of the context. And therefore, Toch Kedei Dibur should be extended from number 2. If number 2 speaks, then number 3 is governed by number 2's Toch Kedei Dibur, not by number 1's. So on and so forth as you go down the chain. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya here fundamentally disagrees with Reish Lakish's understanding of Toch Kedei Dibur. Reish Lakish says Toch Kedei Dibur is literally from the first guy's end of speaking, whereas according to Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, it means after each person speaks, you reset the clock of Toch Kedei Dibur. Or Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya is arguing fundamentally that Toch Kedei Dibur cannot be used in these types of scenarios. Toch Kedei Dibur is only good for retractions. And that's where the Chachamim instituted it. But they did not extend it to cases like this, where an individual can be matpis b'chavero to use or utilize this Toch Kedei Dibur. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya disagrees with Reish Lakish is invoking Toch Kedei Dibur in this scenario where it's not relevant. Toch Kedei Dibur is only relevant for an individual's ability to retract or to change his mind
but not the ability to extend the context of a situation so that other people can be engaged in whatever you are speaking about. So that's another way to look at the question of Rav Yehuda Nisiyah. Now, in general, the Rishonim and Achronim deal over here with the problem of how does the Tokhadei Dibur, it's an institution of the Chachamim, and almost in a sense, it's Oker, Devar Min HaTorah. Min HaTorah, the person's already finished speaking, or according to the Torah, the person cannot use this to enter in another Nizirut because the time frame has elapsed. Tokhadei Dibur is a way to extend that time period, to say context has been extended. So how do the Chachamim do that if Midoraita doesn't work? So many know that that is yesh koach. We have chachamim lakor davar min haTorah. Chachamim have the ability to be oker davar min haTorah, and therefore over here they allow for tochadei dibur as a mechanism for the person to be still considered within context.
The Ran in the Dorim on Daf Pei Zayin suggests that tochadei dibur derives from the mentality of individuals, which is that they reserve a right of retraction. Or we call it buyer's remorse or seller's remorse, that they reserve within their mind that they can retract their statement within a toch kedei dibur, or they can alter their statement within a toch kedei dibur. And therefore, Chazal are just expressing what's the nature of people, that they don't have gemirat hadat until after the toch kedei dibur works. Many of the Achronim point out that that's a great explanation when you're talking about dibur amira. When it comes to a maaseh, an action, like the Gemara there talks about kriya, and the ability to use kriya, tochadei dibur, for another issue, then it presents two problems. Number one, it's not a mira. And number two, is it the din deoraita? And so therefore, they favor saying that the din of tochadei dibur is a din deoraita. Whether it's partly because of the Ran's reasoning with regards to amira, or it's just the Torah setting the bounds of when something is considered contextually relevant, or as if the maaseh is connected to whatever is happening in the environment around you. And Tochadei Dibur, by the Torah Shebaal Peh, explains to us, deoraita, what proper context is. All right, so now the Gemara says, Tanya Nami Ochi, we have a braita that supports this understanding of Reish Lakish. Misha Amar Reini Nazir, V'shama Chaveiro, V'sha'a Kedei Dibur. His friend heard this and waited or tarried Kedei Dibur. V'amar Vani, Hu Asur, V'chaveiro Mutar. The first guy is Asur, the second one is Mutar, because he crossed over Kedei Dibur. And kama kedei dibur, kedei shelat shalom, tamid the rav. It's the amount of time it takes for a talmid to say shalom to greet his rebbe. Lema misayile. Let us say here that we have something that supports Reish Lakish's view. Misha amar ani nazir v'shama chaveiro v'amar vani vani. And he says, me. And one guy says me. And then another guy says me, v'tulo. And no more. So that seems to support Reish Lakish's contention. First of all, that tochadei dibur has an expiry. Number two, according to the Mifaresh, it supports the understanding that you can only add on two more. And according to the Balei HaTosafot, it's supportive of Reish Lakish's opinion that it's three and not four, even though it says Vani twice. Because the Gemara says here, according to Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah, it would have been a big chiddush in the Mishnah to know that there four people could actually get in here. But if you say that, then why, according to Reish Lakish, does it not say three times? So according to Reish Lakish, number three is no different than number two. Therefore, there's no reason to add in another Vani, because it doesn't tell you any more inference or any more Chiddush than number two told you. On the other hand, for Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah, where the last Vani would actually teach you that you can go beyond Tochadei Dibur, it'd be valuable for the Mishnah to say Vani, 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 Vani four times, because that would teach you an additional Chiddush. And that's what the Gemara's question is against Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah. The Gemara's answer is, wait, you want the Mishnah to go ahead and just keep counting like Karuchla, like a merchant who goes out and is selling and he's calling out, I have this, I have that, I have this, I have that. The Bala Mishnah just gives you an example and puts etc. You understand that it can extend on. You don't need to write it explicitly. Mar says, V'lashmina v'litnechad. Just write one Vani. V'lashminian hani. And we would have inferred the others from it. And we would have known from that one the others. Mar says, Ochanami, you're right. Ain't Ochanami. You could have done that. Because the latter half of the Mishnah says, Hutara Rishon, Hutra Kulam, Hutara Acharon, Acharon Mutar Kulan Asurim. The fact that the Mishnah in the latter half denotes Rishon and Acharon, Michlau the Ika Emtsai, makes it obvious that there's a middle person. Because if you have a Rishon and Acharon, you must have an Emtsai, you must have a middle person. And that's why the Mishnah, the Bala Mishnah wrote,
There's the first individual, Vani. Vani gives you three individuals. Once you have three individuals, you can understand the latter half of the Mishnah, which is Rishon, Emtzei, and Acharon, because you have three individuals here. So Enoch and Ami, in terms of the ratio, there's no Chiddush to add in the other second Ani. You could have just sufficed with one Vani. But the Bala Mishnah did it because it makes it clearer and more understandable the second half of the Mishnah when it says Rishon and Acharon. Now the Bala Tosfot asks over here, well, why does the Sefer of the Mishnah say Rishon and Acharon? Why doesn't it just say Hutara Rishon, Hutara Sheni, and then you wouldn't need an Emtzei at all? So he says it depends, based on the upcoming Gemara, which has a machloket as to whether the Hatpasayir is taking place in a daisy chain manner, or it's all connecting back to the first guy. According to the one who says it in a daisy chain manner, that the diuk you make from that is that the Acharon does not get his nether unwound, but the ones before him, their nether stays in place. And that's because it's only the last guy who has no one after him who only affects himself and no one else. But had the Emtzei been Matir Neder, he would have affected others after him. And that shows you that the case in the Mishnah is a daisy chain case. Or according to the one who says that they're all being Matpis in the Rishon, the Tani Emtzei, the Medak, Kedibisamuch, Rishon hu the Shari, Shalacharav. Emtzei lo, you'll make the deal the other way around. Only when you're Matir Neder for the first one does he affect everyone after him. But if the Emtzei is Matir Neder, he affects no one else because they're all Matpis in the Rishon and they are not connected together. So Tosfot says you need the Mishnah to have an Emtzei in order to get the Diyukim of the argument, of the upcoming argument about whether they're Matpis to Rishon or Matpis Echad B'Sheni. That Diyuk is driven by the Mishnah itself, a Diyuk from the Rishon versus the Emtzei or the Acharon versus the Emtzei. That's why the Mishnah had to use Rishon, Acharon, and Emtzei. Once we did that, that's why the Mishnah also wrote Vani, Vani. And that would be an answer both for why we didn't just write Vani once, and the reason that, according to Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah, why we did not enumerate all four, because the Mishnah doesn't have to be like a merchant and list everything out. Why did you not write one Vani? Because of the Sefer of the Mishnah, which indicates there are three parties here, so we say Vani, Vani, and that creates the three parties that you need for the latter half of the Mishnah. Okay, we're going to stop here, 11 lines down, on the top of Chaf Aleph, Amud Aleph.